Welcome to Animals Today, your home for a serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. In 2005, UCSF, University of California, San Francisco, agreed to pay $92,500 to settle a legal complaint filed by the USDA that alleged 75 violations of the Animal Welfare Act between 2001 and 2003. Now, through that settlement, the university avoided further investigations and public scrutiny. Later in 2007, a number of physicians associated with PCRM, that's Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, filed another suit against UCSF, alleging the state was funding research that violated the Animal Welfare Act. That suit was dismissed. Well, UCSF is in the news again with horrible news about a rhesus monkey named Petra. In a recently released inspector's report, this experimental animal suffered for 2 years with a retained piece of acrylic in her head. According to the federal inspector, and I quote here, allowing an animal to remain on a study for almost 2 years while undergoing repeated invasive treatments for chronic complications of the study is not consistent with the intent of the section of the Animal Welfare Act. So now PETA is requesting that the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, require UCSF to return the $2.1 million grant that funded the study Petra was involved in. Now, later in the show, we'll be asking our guest, Dr. Larry Hansen, what he thinks about the UCSF situation and issues related to compliance with so-called humane practices in animal research labs. And, of course, to get a more complete picture of regulations related to animal labs, you really need to know a little bit about Institutional Animal Care and Use Committees, IACUCs. Professor Larry Hansen is well-versed in this area and has just published an article in the Journal of Medical Ethics titled, Institutional Animal Care and Use Committees Need Greater Ethical Diversity. Dr. Hansen is professor of pathology at UC San Diego School of Medicine, where he specializes in neuropathology and neurological disease. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you very much for having me.
Larry, let's start with the basics. What are IACUCs?
Yeah, I apologize to your listeners that they're going to have to sit through some of these litany of letters to understand what we're talking about. But IACUC stands for Institutional Animal Care and Use Committees, and the short version of that is IACUC, so everybody calls them IACUC. And it's even a vulgar-sounding kind of an acronym, and it sort of gives you something inclination as to how the animals are going to fare at the hands of the IACUC. So animals get IACUC'd all the time in universities. And IACUCs were mandated in 1985 in an amendment to the Animal Welfare Act. So if you have to go all the way back to the Animal Welfare Act, that was 1966, and that was established in response to public outrage over a Life magazine expose about dogs that were being snatched from front yards or taken from free-to-good home ads and then sold to research labs. And so family pets were ending up being vivisected and killed in medical research. And so they passed the Animal Welfare Act to protect dog and cat owners, basically. And then that has been amended through the years, and as a result of another public outcry over an expose of horrible monkey torture that was going on in Silver Springs, Maryland in 1985, they amended the Animal Welfare Act to stipulate IACUCs. So in 1985, they said, okay, now anybody that uses federal money to do animal experimentation has to have the animal experimentation protocols approved by an institutional animal care and use committee, an IACUC. So that's where IACUCs come from. So since 1985, all the research universities have to have these committees established to review animal research protocols before they're allowed to go continue with the animal research.
And how do the committees function in actual practice?
Well, not very well from the point of view of animal welfare advocates. I think it's important to keep in mind that it wasn't research scientists who agitated to pass the Animal Welfare Act, and it wasn't research scientists who agitated to establish IACUCs. They were resisting this all the way. They were saying, we don't need anybody telling us how to take care of animals. So basically what the research universities have done, because they don't want to interfere with the flow of money, because animal research comes with lots of money, and you just follow the money to understand people's motivations. So what they've done is they've stacked the deck with these IACUCs, and the vast majority of IACUC members are animal researchers, and the people who are the chairs of the IACUCs are also animal researchers. When they originally established IACUCs in 1985, there were two sets of criteria for who's supposed to be on the committee. One was set by the Public Health Service, and the other was set by the Animal Welfare Act itself. And according to these two criteria, initially IACUCs had to have, according to the Public Health Service, four members, two of which were supposed to be non-scientists or community representatives to allow the community to weigh in on what's being done with animals using our tax dollars. So 50% of the IACUCs should have been non-research scientists. And according to the Animal Welfare Act, they said IACUCs have to have three members, and one of them has to be a representative of the community, so one-third. But they didn't stipulate what the maximum number was. They just put the minimum number. And so what the universities did is they started to stack the deck. So now the average IACUC has 23 members, and of those, 67% are animal researchers, and 15% are university veterinarians who take care of the animals that are being researched on. So that means 82% of the IACUC members nationwide have a vested interest in continuing and approving all of animal research, and anybody who might be looking out for the animals is marginalized and largely ignored. So it's become a rubber stamp, and you could say, right. Well, how do I know that? Well, we studied the composition of the IACUCs to come up with the numbers I just gave you, and there have been a lot of studies through the years about IACUC approval rates. So every research protocol that involves animals has to be approved by the IACUC, or it cannot continue. So you might wonder, well, what percentage of all the research that the scientists propose gets approved? Well, it turns out it's 100%. So IACUCs approve everything, which means that they're not really acting as they're supposed to act. The enabling legislation says that IACUCs are supposed to respect society's concerns regarding the welfare of animal subjects. Well, 100% approval rate is not reflecting anybody's concern. So I guess the short version is IACUCs, in my experience, as I've researched them, are largely rubber stamps and pro forma, and they don't serve to protect the animals. The big issue is that they do not make ethical cost-benefit determinations. They don't look at a research protocol and say, well, how much pain and suffering is this going to cause the animal versus the potential benefit to humans? Experts on how IACUCs function will just say that relevance of research to human disease is not part of their deliberations. That's not how they work. They don't make cost benefit ethical judgments.
Yeah, this is crazy. So there no ethical concerns are a part of their decision making, and they approve 100% of the animal research that's going on. What's the point, Larry? Can you discuss the study in which research proposals were evaluated in a blinded fashion by other institutions and the comparison to in-house research approval rates? That was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that pretty much tells it all. So in addition to looking at the composition of the IACUCs, people have looked at the outcome of protocol review. And so the way they do that, there's so much conflict of interest in IACUCs. There's so much bias. There's the absolute refusal to engage in recusal. I mean, it's the foxes guarding the hen house. It's the wolves guarding the sheep.
Right.
So this one, the seminal study on this basically wanted to find out what the protocol approval rate was. So they took all these animal use protocols that had to be approved by IACUCs in-house, say all of the ones were done at one institution. For example, it was all the IACUC protocols at the University of California. And they took those protocols and they sent them to IACUCs at different universities, say at Hopkins or someplace else. And they said, how many of these animal use protocols would you approve? And when the animal use protocols were reviewed outside of the institution where they originated, say at Hopkins, we're reviewing the protocols from UCSD, it turned out that the majority of them had serious flaws, and about 60% of them would have been approved and 40% would have been disapproved. Whereas when you look at the in-house approval rates, 100% were approved. So it's just you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. The people on the IACUCs are approving animal use protocols, but they are animal users themselves. So they know that next month their animal use protocol is going to come up for approval by the same IACUC. So they're not going to disapprove somebody's animal use protocol and know that next month the same guy is going to have a chance to disapprove of mine. So it's all paint by numbers. It's all formalities. They approve everything, and there really isn't any ethical decision making that goes into IACUCS.
Wow. Stay with us. We're speaking to Dr. Larry Hansen. We're talking about animal research. And Larry, after the break, we're going to ask you what we can do about this and if you see any changes in the future on this. So you're listening to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner.
That's the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them. So show dogs will be quiet in transit between shows or in the ring. So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day. Animals Today joins with Coalition to Protect and Rescue Pets in saying shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the vets who perform this inhumane, unnecessary surgery for them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice. Protect theirs. This message is sponsored by Desert Paws. Visit them at desertpaws.org.
If you needed a brain transplant, would you go to the second best brain surgeon? No, you'd go with number one. Well, it's exactly the same with Printer Ink. Yeah, sort of. See, Staples is the number one ink retailer in America. And right now, get a $15 iTunes gift card instantly when you spend $75 or more on ink at Staples. It's a no-brainer. Staples. That was easy.
In-store only. Ends 12/24/12. Gift cards not returnable. Returned ink refund amount reduced by gift card value. Excludes Epson inks. Subject to availability while supplies last. No rain checks. Limit to Apple not participating in or sponsoring promotion.
It's a scientific fact. Man can only hear certain frequencies during football season. So the jewelry store at Macy's is sending subliminal messages over these radio wavelengths.
There's the snap. It's a blitz! And Christopher Gonzalez of Queens, New York, your girlfriend wants 2-carat diamond stud earrings for Christmas. And time is running off the clock. Also, don't forget to clean the litter box. You made an agreement. And besides, it's not even her cat.
She's trying to tell you something. This holiday, get her what she really wants from the jewelry store at Macy's.
Jay Farner here from Quicken Loans. We get a lot of tweets from folks that sound just like this. Jay, I bought my home in 2007. Since then, it's gone down in value. Now I owe more on my mortgage than my home is worth. Can I refinance? The answer may very well be yes. Recently, the government announced changes that may allow folks to refinance even if their home has lost value. For example, if you owe $300,000 on your mortgage, but your home's only worth $150,000, Quicken Loans may still be able to help you. Or if your current mortgage rate is higher than 3.99%, you've got to give us a call today at 800-QUICKEN. And for 3 years in a row now, J.D. Power & Associates has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. So if your current mortgage is higher than 3.99%, or if you owe more than your home is worth, call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Important terms and conditions apply. Calls for cost information. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Prices are for base buildings only. May not be available in some areas.
Attention business owners, do you want a stimulus package that really works? Before you spend thousands of dollars more than you should on your next building project, listen to this. General Steel has a stimulus package designed to help you save as much as half the cost of conventional construction on your next building.
As much as half?
That's right. General Steel can save you thousands of dollars with a pre-engineered steel building designed for your business or church. How about a 50 by 100 foot building for under $30,000? So don't pay thousands. thousands more than you should without calling General Steel first, and save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction. With the projected demand for steel in Japan and China, prices may be skyrocketing.
Call 800-215-1727, 800-215-1727, 800-215-1727.
Welcome back to the show. This is Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We're speaking to Professor Larry Hansen, and we're talking about his article that was just published in the Journal of Medical Ethics. It's titled, Institutional Animal Care and Use Committees Need Greater Ethical Diversity. Larry, in the article, you get into a discussion about biases and groupthink as they relate to the function of IACUCs, IACOCs. What did you discover there?
Well, it's a little bit like, well, duh, when you think about it. I decided that since I was stunned by the fact that IACUCs approve 100% of all animal research that's presented to them, and I know that just people off the street would recoil in horror from some of the things that IACUCs approve, I wondered how come these people were just giving the go-ahead to all sorts of painful and invasive and lethal research on animals that normally create a lot of empathy, like monkeys and dogs and cats. So I just checked into the psychology research on bias, and it's kind of quantified common sense. It basically, a whole bunch of psychological studies have shown that bias is pervasive in us all. And interestingly enough, when like-minded people get together, they gravitate towards the most extreme position in the group. And just listen to Fox News on the one hand and MSNBC on the other hand, and you can see that that happens. It isn't that like-minded people will sort of gravitate to the middle. They don't. They get increasingly extreme. So any group of like-minded people becomes extreme in their position. So if you make an IACUC populated exclusively by animal researchers, it doesn't take long before they fail to see anything wrong with anything that people are proposing to do to animals. You need to have a balance. You need to have people in that group who don't have the bias that animal research is invariably a good thing and the ends always justify the means. You have to you have to expand the membership of the group to include other perspectives.
So, Larry, there's been attempts to bring into the committees laypersons and ethicists. What are the benefits and problems with those efforts?
Well, the problems are just that they're outnumbered. They're simply swamped by the animal researchers who dominate the committees. And if you're a member of a small minority, the odds are either you're going to be too intimidated, and people who've been on that committee who try to raise ethical issues find that they're marginalized and they're dismissed, and their opinions are not regarded seriously. So that's why you need to have a balance, and hopefully that would be the best way to fix the IACUC system, is to make it less disproportionately overrepresented by animal researchers themselves.
So, Larry, the nearest university to me here in Palm Springs, California, is Loma Linda University. Can I just call them up and ask to be appointed to their IACUC? I'm quite sure I could make things more interesting in such a position.
I think you should do that. I think you should try. I doubt that they will put you on there. I mean, it's interesting. You're exactly the kind of person they should have on there. You're a highly educated, very intelligent pillar of the community, and you're a taxpayer, and you want to have some input into what's being done with your tax dollars at your university, and then report back to your audience as to how far you get. I think you'll find you get an incredible amount of resistance, and you will get nowhere. One of the astonishing things about how IACUCs function or fail to function from our point of view, the point of view of animal welfare activists, is that they're specifically mandated, and I'll quote from their legislation, to respect society's concerns regarding the welfare of animal subjects. That's in the legislation. And yet they don't do that. They don't take into account how the general public who pays for the research would respond to some of these research proposals. We would have a much higher bar for research involving primates and dogs and cats than we would for animals that don't get as much empathy, rats and mice. But they go ahead and they approve everything that's proposed for monkeys, dogs, and cats.
But Larry, isn't much of what happens in these research labs hidden from the community?
Oh yeah, totally hidden from the community. Literally underground. We have a lot of primate research that goes on here at the Salk Institute in the Scripps, Salk Institute mostly, up on the Mesa, and the animal cages are underground and out of sight, so the people can't see them. And that's another thing. Try to get permission to go down and see these monkeys with their heads bolted into frames and their electrodes going into their brains, being deprived of water so you can learn about visual tracking, and they will never let you go in there. So, yes, it is very much hidden from public view.
Well, then, so how can they function properly and efficiently if their job is supposed to respond to public outrage if this is all hidden from public awareness?
Well, it's like a lot of government bureaucracies. As long as you dot the I's and cross the T's, you'll be okay. So they will. They've done is they are, because they kind of subverted the intention of the Animal Welfare Act, which was to get public concerns up front in deciding whether or not to approve animal research protocols. What they did instead by stacking the deck with animal researchers is they said, okay, well, everything is run through the IACUC, which is what the law says. Everything is approved by the IACUC, which is what the law says. And the law doesn't stipulate that there has to be a cost-benefit ethical analysis. So they are technically in compliance with all of the regulations of the IACUC. But the regulations are so full of loopholes. It's a collection of hollow injunctions and broad loopholes and light penalties when there are any. We'll talk later about the penalties for UCSF. But everything they did was completely according to the rules. But the rules are they're kind of a joke.
So what are your conclusions about the current function of the committees, the Institutional Animal Care and Use Committees, IACOCs, and what should happen, Larry, and what's possible under the law?
Okay, my conclusion is that they have subverted the intention of the Animal Welfare Act, and they've stacked the deck, so the wolves are guarding the sheep, and what basically they don't respect society's concerns regarding the welfare of laboratory animals, which they are stipulated to do. You'll have to pardon me for getting so emotional about this, but at University of California, San Francisco, or University of California, San Diego, I appealed to the IACUC to stop dog labs. They were vivisecting dogs in medical school for physiology and pharmacology, and a bunch of other physicians and I signed a petition saying we don't need to kill dogs to teach medical students. We know that. We're physicians. And the IACUCs are supposed to respect these 3 R's of reduction, replacement, or refinement. They're supposed to replace lethal animal vivisections when there's alternatives. So we did a nationwide survey and found out that 95% of schools didn't kill any animals, let alone dogs, so why can't our university replace them? So I appealed to the IACUC, and I quoted the guidebook, chapter and verse, about how you have to find alternatives. And their response was, the IACUC looked at this issue and found the dog vivisection raises, quotes, no animal welfare issues, close quotes, and we're going to continue with the dog labs. So you figure you've fallen through the rabbit hole. I mean, these people don't use the language the way you do. This is Orwellian newspeak to say that killing dogs is not an animal welfare issue. It drives you mad.
That's incredible. That is an incredible story. So at UC San Diego, dog labs are continuing there?
Well, fortunately, after IACUC, we appealed to the IACUC system thinking, perfect, this is exactly it. We documented nationwide research that there are replacements. You don't need to do this. We'll paint by numbers. We'll follow the algorithm. And then they completely rejected us with this Orwellian newspeak. Then we took it to the public, and we had protests, and I got on TV shows and radio shows, and we got a campaign, don't contribute to the university until they end the dog labs. And finally, after about 10 years of that, they went outside the IACUCs, and the dean of the medical school established a committee, and the committee looked at it, and the committee said, this is ridiculous, stop the dog lab. So the IACUC didn't do its job, but we got it done with public outrage.
Good for you. Dr. Larry Hansen, don't go away.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS that you can't pay? Call now for immediate help. 866-657-8517. At Community Tax Relief, we help consumers like you. If you take on the IRS alone, you could be facing levies, liens, even wage garnishments, personal or business tax issues. If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more, they will aggressively come after you. Protect yourself and your family today from what the IRS can do to you. Call now, 866-657-8517. They can freeze your bank account, even garnish your wages. Our expert team of tax professionals can solve your tax problems once and for all. Call now for a free 5-minute tax debt analysis. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517.
There's no getting around it. The great outdoors isn't so great for your cat. From speeding cars to toxic lawn chemicals, coyotes to cruel humans, cats are no match for the dangers of today's world. The good news is animal behaviorists say cats don't need to go outside to be happy. Your family will be happier and much healthier, too, without the ticks, fleas, diseases, and the dead critters that outdoor cats bring their owners. And you'll never have to explain to a sobbing child who or what hurt her pet or why he hasn't come home. For starters, don't let your kitten out. He won't miss what he doesn't know. But even adult cats can adapt to life indoors. The key is to provide attention, exercise, and a stimulating environment. Play with your cat. You can hide toys around the house, too. Just make sure there are no detachable parts that can be swallowed. Is he still wanting to get out? Consult an animal behaviorist for more tips. Animals Today urges you, don't give up. Right now, today, you can protect your cat from becoming a tragic statistic. Tomorrow may be too late.
This message is brought to you by Desert Paws. Visit us at desertpaws.org.
Hi, how can I help you?
Yeah, I'd like to, say thanks for that discount thing.
Ma'am?
You know, the, monthly Sprint discount you gave me.
You're welcome, but why are you whispering?
Because if this gets out, everybody in the whole credit union will want a Sprint discount like I got.
But every credit union member can get a Sprint discount like you got.
Sure, if you keep blabbing about it loud enough for everyone to hear.
It's no secret. If you're a credit union member, you can save 10 to 15% every month on your Sprint monthly service plan. It's part of a program called Invest in America, where credit union members get big discounts on essential goods and services, like Sprint wireless service. And as a credit union member, Sprint will also waive all your activation and upgrade fees.
Ex-nay.
So if you aren't already a credit union member, it's another smart reason to join.
Jeez, why don't you broadcast it?
Actually, we are.
Oh.
Learn more at lovemycreditunion.org/sprint. Coverage not available everywhere. Discount subject to 2-year agreement, up to $350 early termination fee, credit approval, and deposit. Restrictions apply. See store or website for details.
On a chapstick Christmas, my true love gave to me 8 chapstick cherries, 7 peppermints, 6 green apples, 5 chapstick raspberry creams, 4 apple ciders, 3 strawberries, 2 vanilla mints, and a limited edition candy cane.
Stuff your stockings with all the great flavors of Chapstick this year, all in the cough and cold aisle. Chapstick, apply happy.
Alrighty, emergency vitamin drink mix radio, take 74.
With 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C plus energizing B vitamins, emergency will make you immortal.
No.
What?
Emergency supports your immune system.
Oh, immune.
Yeah, doesn't make you immortal.
No?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, oh, right. Okay,
let's just take another one.
Okay. With 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C plus energizing B vitamins, emergency supports your immune system.
There we go.
So you'll probably live forever.
What are you doing to me?
Get your free sample at myemergency.com. Stay healthy and feel the good.
And now Geico presents 30 Seconds with Maxwell the Pig.
Maxwell, you're on.
Cool. And so you just want me to read the script? You don't want me to do the wee thing?
Okay. Today I'm going to talk about the new Geico mobile app and how you can manage your policy and get your ID card and customize it with your favorite Geico character. But I'm not yelling wee or anything because they don't want me to, right?
Correct.
Okay. Just saying it's my thing.
Everything you love about Geico, now mobile. Download the new Geico app today.
Inhabitants of Earth, you can run, but you cannot. What are you doing?
I'm watching Netflix on my smartphone, dude.
What?
I can instantly watch as many TV episodes and movies as I want.
You don't fear for your life?
Yeah, not really. Our atmosphere is eventually going to kill you anyway.
Nonsense. Our anatomy is...
There you go. Faster than I thought.
Instantly watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on all kinds of devices for only $8 a month with Netflix. Start your free trial today. See terms of use.
They call them the Diamond Dogs.
Welcome back to the show. We're speaking to Dr. Larry Hansen. Dr. Hansen is professor of pathology at UC San Diego School of Medicine, where he specializes in neuropathology and neurological diseases. Welcome, Larry, back to the show. You were involved with the suit against UCSF. Can you explain what was being alleged and what happened?
Sure. UCSF is one of the major primate vivisection centers in the country, and they do what most people would think of as pretty horrible things to primates. And in particular, the experiments we were concerned about is where monkeys have their heads immobilized by putting plates and bolts and screws into their heads, and they have electrodes put in the brain, and then they're tied into chairs, and then they're deprived of water, and then they will get a sip of water if they track a visual object, and they have electrodes attached to their eyes. Horrible, horrible stuff, but basic science research in visual tracking. So that's going on at UCSF, and we thought that that was a violation of the Animal Welfare Act, because just if I could quote part of the Animal Welfare Act, it says no animal is supposed to be used in more than one major operative experiment from which it is allowed to recover, except in cases of scientific necessity or other special circumstances. So they just ignored this prohibition against repeat surgeries. Anyhow, so they were doing terrible things. And even though those terrible things were approved by IACUC, because they bring in money, they still couldn't do them without the monkeys losing too much weight because they were dehydrated too long, or the monkeys developing infections from these indwelling bolts and plates and screws. And so they were periodically being fined by the Animal Plant and Health Inspection Service, APHIS, which comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, because these monkeys were suffering, and that was a violation of the Animal Welfare Act, even though they were allowed to do horrible things to them. Despite that latitude, the monkeys were suffering too excessively, even for the Animal Welfare Act. So they got $92,000 in fines over the course of 5 or 6 years, and they paid those fines using University of California money. So what our suit alleged was that these people were repeatedly failing to follow the Animal Welfare Act, repeatedly being fined, and they were paying those fines through California taxpayer money. And there's a law that says if California taxpayer money is being used for illegal purposes, then you can sue the people that are using it. So we said, well, they're violating the law. They're paying the fines with taxpayer money. So we, California taxpayers, filed suit against UCSF and said you have to stop these experiments because you're paying the fines with our money. That was the contention. And they went to court, and the judge ruled against us. He said the Animal Welfare Act, which is where the fines came from, is a federal law, whereas the law we were suing under that says you can't use California's taxpayers' monies for illegal activities is a state law. So we sued in state court, but he said we had no jurisdiction, no standing, because it was a federal law that was being violated. So that's why we lost the case. But that was where all that came from. Yeah.
So there's a recent report of a rhesus monkey being maintained for nearly 2 years with this non-healing wound in her head due to a piece of acrylic that was accidentally left in the surgical site.
It's the same song, second verse. And again, I apologize to your listeners if I'm just a little too intense about this, but there are so few protections afforded to animals under the Animal Welfare Act. And then when those few protections to those very few animals are ignored, it just drives you crazy. Really, the Animal Welfare Act only covers a small number of animals, primates, dogs, and cats. And even those animals don't get protected by the Animal Welfare Act. And again, it says in the Animal Welfare Act that no animal is supposed to be used for multiple surgeries, where you operate, the animal recovers, and you operate again, the animal recovers, you operate again, except in cases of, quote, scientific necessity or, quote, other special circumstances. So the IACUC looks at these protocols and says, well, gee, you're not supposed to be able to do multiple surgeries on these monkeys, but if you think it's necessary, okay, go ahead. Or if you just think it's a special circumstance, go ahead. So these poor monkeys have these repeated surgeries, and because anybody with repeated surgeries is at great risk for infection, this poor monkey had some acrylic left in his brain, or in his skull, rather, when they were doing these head surgeries, and it caused a festering chronic infection for 2 years, and the monkey suffered with this unhealed festering wound for 2 years, and that was even... The IACUC said, well, it's okay, keep operating. But finally, the Animal Plant and Health Inspection Service from the USDA said, gee, this is awful, so we're fining you again. So there are very, very few constraints, practically no constraints on what the scientists can do. And even with that, they cause too much suffering and they actually trigger penalties.
That's incredible, Larry. And it's incredible that these things continue to go like this. I mean, there's nothing we can do?
Well, I don't like to be hopeless about it. The pattern for animal welfare has always been the same, that the closer you get to the people, in this case the taxpayers or the regular citizens, the better the animals do. And the further away you get from people with vested interests, the better the animals do. So obviously you cannot trust research scientists to look out for the welfare of animals. It's very analogous to, in California, we passed Prop 2, which banned battery cages and gestation crates and veal crates. Well, you weren't going to expect the farmers or the chicken ranchers to increase the humane treatment of their animals, but the citizens did. So you can't expect the animal researchers or the IACUCs to do this, but citizens can. So it's such a painfully slow procedure, but it has to be done apparently through legislation and further amendments of the Animal Welfare Act and balancing the deck a little better between animal researchers and representatives of the community and electing animal-friendly representatives and working through the system. I don't know how else to do it, and it's horrible for the animals that have to suffer, but that's about the only way forward that I can see.
Now, going back to the UCSF case, what do you think of PETA's request that the NIH demand a refund of $2.1 million from UCSF?
I think it's brilliant. I think it will go nowhere, and I think it would be fair if they did that, and that would really get them. I mean, yes, if you get them where the money supply is coming in, that really gets their attention. $92,000 for a fine, that's chump change. I mean, these bring in millions of dollars is in the PETA suit. They bring in $2 million, and they figure, well, we have to pay a $100,000 fine. So what? That's just the cost of doing business. But if they could get a sympathetic judge, and you think in San Francisco you might get a sympathetic judge, that would make a big change really fast. So I applaud PETA for trying it, and I applaud PCRM for filing the lawsuit that we filed, and we'll keep poking away at them, trying to use the law as best we can, but it's an uphill battle.
Larry, over the past few decades, how are the attitudes of the public concerning animal experimentation changing?
Boy, is that a great question. Because the animal researchers will say, the public supports animal research. But that really depends. As you know, you can get any answer you want from a public opinion survey, depending on how you phrase the question. So the best example of that is there was a huge nationwide survey a few years back that said 70% of the public approves of animal research. But then if you ask them, do you approve of animal research on monkeys, it turns out 55% said no, but you shouldn't do it to monkeys. And if you ask them, do you approve of animal research on dogs and cats, it turns out that 73% of them said no, you shouldn't research on dogs and cats. So it turns out that the public actually is much more opposed to animal research, particularly on our fellow primates and on animals that have been conditioned and genetically selected from 10,000 years of breeding to love us. The public is much more wary of animal abuse than the animal researchers are, which is why they have to stack the deck of IACUCs with animal researchers. So, yes, the public is actually increasingly opposed to animal research, particularly for our fellow primates and dogs and cats.
Mm. Larry, any last message for my listeners?
Well, just they should be aware that there really are no effective protections for animals and in research, and that the animal researchers will say, oh, we dot the I's and we cross the T's and everything has to go through IACUCs. Keep in mind that IACUCs approve 100%, and then they will also say, oh, you know, you're only really worried about primates, dogs, and cats, and that's less than 0.1% of all the animals. Yeah, well, that's easy to switch those percentages around. You just bring another 100,000 mice, and that drops down the percentage of primates, dogs, and cats. But there are more primates being researched on in research laboratories now than ever before in the history of American research.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
More than ever before in absolute numbers. And the animals don't have any protections, so don't fall for it when the animal researchers say, trust us to take good care of the animals.
Mm. The title of the article in the Journal of Medical Ethics is Institutional Animal Care and Use Committees Need Greater Ethical Diversity from Dr. Larry Hansen. That will be posted on our website along with this recording, and the website is animalstodayradio.com. Professor Larry Hansen, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Don't go away. We have Peter in the news right after the break.
Things are falling down on me, heavy things I could not see. When I finally came around, something small would bring me down. When I tried to step aside, I moved to where they'd hoped I'd be.
So you and your family have decided to get a dog or cat. We think that's great, and we want to remind you to adopt your next pet instead of buying. That's because there are so many lovable, adoptable dogs and cats waiting to go home that it just doesn't make sense to buy a pet from a breeder or pet store. And tragically, 50 to 70% of all animals that enter shelters are euthanized. That's millions per year. So when you adopt your pet from a shelter, most likely you really are saving a life. Did you know that most dogs sold in pet stores come from puppy mills, crowded, inhumane breeding facilities that exist simply for the profit of their owners? Did you ever consider that dog breeders are in business mainly to create and sell animals? Buying animals just makes pet overpopulation worse because it perpetuates unneeded breeding and takes away chances to live from sheltered animals. Even if you want a particular breed, you should still visit a shelter because 20 to 25% of animals housed in shelters are purebred. Or contact an animal rescue group that works with the breed you like. With not much effort, you can usually find your perfect companion. So remember, adopt and save a life. It'll give you a nice, warm, and furry feeling. This message is from Desert Paws. Visit us at desertpaws.org. Did you know that there's a huge problem with pet overpopulation? There are so many unwanted dogs and cats that sadly millions of wonderful pets are euthanized every year in shelters because there's just nowhere for them to go. Consider that one female dog and her offspring can produce more than 50,000 puppies in just 6 years, and that a female cat and her kittens can produce more than 400,000 cats in 7 years. Now, everybody loves a cute puppy or a playful kitten, but there simply are not enough people to care for all the animals. If you let your animal have a litter, even just one, then these kittens and puppies can go on to produce more offspring themselves. We can all help reduce this problem by spaying or neutering our animals as soon as we obtain them. That's what responsible pet owners do. Ask your veterinarian about the procedure. You'll also learn that spaying and neutering can allow your pet to live a longer, healthier life by reducing the chances of certain cancers. There are other benefits too. Fixed animals are less likely to bite, fight, roam, or run away. Neutered cats are less likely to mark their territory. And because they do not go into heat cycles, they are less likely to cry continuously or to attract unwanted animals. So make sure to spay or neuter your pets right away and tell your friends and relatives about how we can all help make pet euthanasia a thing of the past. This message presented by Desert Paws. Visit us at desertpaws.org.
What's your New Year's resolution? If your answer involves getting your finances in order, why wait till the new year? That's a resolution that deserves your attention today. Hey everybody, Jay Farner here from Quicken Loans. A great way to shape up your finances for the new year is our exclusive Yorgage. A Quicken Loans Yorgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it's a fixed-rate home loan that allows you to select a term that's best for your budget, anywhere from 8 to 30 years. Our 8,000-plus team members are dedicated to guiding you to the best mortgage decision with certainty. The rate today on an 8-year fixed mortgage is an incredible 2.75%, APR 3.43%. And for 3 years in a row now, J.D. Power & Associates has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Call Quicken Loans right now at 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN, or visit us at quickenloans.com.
For J.D. Power and Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Call for additional cost information. Other restrictions may apply. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Prices are for base buildings only. May not be available in some areas.
Attention business owners, do you want a stimulus package that really works? Before you spend thousands of dollars more than you should on your next building project, listen to this. General Steel has a stimulus package designed to help you save as much as half the cost of conventional construction on your next building.
As much as half.
That's right. General Steel can save you thousands of dollars with a pre-engineered steel building designed for your business or church. How about a 50 by 100 foot building for under $30,000? So don't pay thousands more than you should without calling General Steel first, and save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction. With the projected demand for steel in Japan and China, prices may be skyrocketing.
Call 800-215-1727, 800-215-1727, 800-215-1727.
Dave Davis here with the Channel 5 Traffic Report. You're on your own, commuters. I've got shopping to do. Drop her over there, Nick, at the mall.
prep your car for holiday travel and check gifts off your list today at Sears Auto Center. Come in now and get a $21.99 conventional oil change plus a $5 coupon to shop while you wait. This is being prepared. This is Sears Auto Center. Stop by or visit SearsAuto.com for more offers and coupons.
Valid for most vehicles, regularly $29.99. Coupon valid through 12/29. Exclusions apply. See store for details.
If you needed a brain transplant, would you go to the second best brain surgeon? No, you'd go with number one. Well, it's exactly the same with printer ink. Yeah, sort of. See, Staples is the number one ink retailer in America. And right now, get a $15 iTunes gift card instantly when you spend $75 or more on ink at Staples. It's a no-brainer. Staples. That was easy.
In-store only. Ends 12/24/12. Gift cards not returnable. Returned ink refund amount reduced by gift card value. Excludes Epson inks. Subject to availability while supplies last. No rain checks. Limit to Apple not participating in or sponsoring promotion.
Lori,
very appropriate song for the interview we just had with Dr. Larry Hansen.
You bet.
Yeah. So what's going on in the news?
The Westminster Dog Show has added two new breeds, two new breeds for the judging. So now there's, how many? Now there's 187 breeds.
Why do we need two more breeds?
Well, I don't know. Why do you need 185 breeds?
So now more people are just going to want to get two additional more breeds.
You can get a Russell Terrier. It's 10 to 12 inches tall to shoulder. And then there's this Treeing Walker Coonhound, which is another kind of hound dog. And
it just supports the breeding industry, of course.
Yes.
And when there's so many animals that we kill in our shelters in our country every single year, it's incredible. We don't need more breeds of dogs. We don't need more breeders.
The show has also added a venue. So before the final judging, the breeding judging is being done at Pier 92, 94 in the Hudson River. And people can get closer to the dogs and closer to the breeders, I guess.
Why don't we create 500 breeds or 1,000 more breeds?
Yeah.
I mean, why not just create any mixture of two dogs and say it's a breed?
You know, like the Labradoodle thing. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know. And people, it becomes a little status thing.
Talk about status things. Listen to this.
Oh, boy.
I saw your article on your desk when you were busy the other day, and I looked up real quick. The 11 most expensive dog breeds.
Wow. Like to buy a dog.
Yeah. They're just all status symbols. Pembroke Welch Corgi. You probably haven't heard of any of these. For $1,000. That's one of the cheaper ones here. It's famous for being the favorite of Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah.
The second and preferred pet of the British royalty for over 70 years.
Yes.
There's another one. Number two, Saluki. I don't know. Have you heard of that? $2,500 typically. Also known as the Arabian Hound or the Persian Greyhound. And it appears in the Egyptian tombs and the Bible. And it's one of the oldest breeds. There's a Chow Chow.
Yeah.
Chow Chow. Up to $8,500.
Really?
Yeah. Egyptian Pharaoh Hound. Up to $6,500.
Yeah.
Then you have the old English bulldog, $9,000.
Wow.
$9,000. And they're just known to be very, very sweet and easy to please. And because of the temperament, the popularity has actually grown in recent years. $9,000. You get an English bulldog. Let's see what else is on the list. This is the sixth one that they had on their list. Canadian Eskimo dog, $7,000. In the 19th century, there was a high demand for these because of the polar expeditions.
Yeah.
Seven, I don't know how to pronounce this, Lao Chen, $5,000 to $8,000. It's Lao Chen, little lion in German. It means little lion.
Gotcha.
Looks like a little lion. Number eight.
And you know, what are people painting their dogs to look like wild animals? Okay. Have you seen that?
They dye their hair, their fur. I know.
You've got a dog that looks like an actual lion, so that.
I don't know. Why do they paint the nails of their dogs? And okay. So, number eight, Samoyed.
Samoyed. Right.
$4,000 to $11,000.
Yeah.
Number nine,
yeah.
You heard of this one, Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. Up to $14,000. Another breed that has received, you know, has been with,
I'd be embarrassed to have a dog with a name like that. I mean, what do you have? You know,
I have a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
And you have to say it with
a British accent.
You have to,
Okay. Number 10, German Shepherd, $230. But look at all the German Shepherds in our shelters.
Yeah. And what you can do with $6,500 instead of buying a genetically inbred, bound to have a medical or behavioral issues animal that doesn't need to be on this planet.
Number 11, guess what? Most expensive one you'll never guess because you probably haven't heard of it. Tibetan Mastiff.
Oh, I knew that
one. You knew that one?
No.
Okay. $1.5 million serves as a status symbol among China's elite. So,
a single dog?
Yes. Listen to this.
What does this carry you?
Well, I'm going to read to you what's on this below this little dog's face. The Tibetan Mastiff serves as a status symbol among China's elite. The cost of a typical one ranges between $2,000 and $7,000, but the most expensive Mastiff ever sold was priced at an incredible 10 million yuan, or $1.45 million. The Mastiff named Hong Dong, which means big splash, was raised on a diet of beef, chicken, abalone, and sea cucumbers. Price tag can be attributed to his superb lineage and breeding prospects. At least the new owner, a wealthy coal baron, will be able to make back some of his money by lending his dog to breeders who promise to pay as much as $100,000 to have his genes added to their breeding lines.
You know, that says so much.
Okay,
There's crazy people all over the world, but this notion of making your money back by breeding is pervasive, and it goes from the elite dogs all the way down to the people who are just want to get a extra litter out so they can sell them locally or make their money back.
Exactly.
And it usually doesn't work out so well, right?
Oh.
And we've seen some of these breeders in action. The ones that they can sell, they'll sell, and then they're left with extra animals that they need to dish off.
It's so sad, and really it's tragic when you know how many animals that are killed in our country's shelters every year.
Yeah.
You know, and purely and truly people just buy these animals as a status symbol. Yeah.
Well,
I guess we ran out of time. We got hooked on this one case. Sorry about that.
Next week,
okay.
I've got a lot of interesting news items from around the world.
Good. I used up your whole segment.
I've got whale news, devil birds, and what happens when animal care workers lose control.
Okay. We'll look forward to that.
All right.
Okay. Thank you for listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirschner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks, so please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.